and welcome to the Triathlon Coach Podcast. My name's Simon Ward and I'm your host for this weekly show where my goal is to share practical, usable advice from the best athletes, coaches and experts from the world of triathlon so that you can get the most from your training time and maximize your enjoyment of the triathlon lifestyle. If you don't already know me, I'm the founder of thetriathloncoach.com and the SWAT Inner Circle, and I've been a triathlon coach for over 20 years, working with absolute beginners right up to Olympic athletes and coaching them to race at distances from sprint through to Ironman. Reviews and ratings are the currency of podcasts, so if you enjoy today's conversation, I'd really appreciate it if you could drop into iTunes, Podbean or Stitcher and leave a rating and a review. And while you're there, please subscribe to our weekly episodes so that they can be downloaded straight into your phone or your iPad or wherever you choose to listen to them. And finally, to say thank you, I have a free gift for you. I've put together 25 of my top tips amassed from 30 years of racing and training and coaching in the sport. All you have to do is email triathlonsuccess to beth@thetriathloncoach.com and she'll send it right out to you. Okay, now it's time to crack on with today's guest. Today, my guest is Sian Rainsley. Now, if you are an aficionado of under 23 and junior triathlon in the UK, you will have known about Sian for quite a while. She's finished third in the European under 23 triathlon, ninth in the world under 23 triathlon. She's also got three gold medals in the European mixed team relays at junior and under 23 level. And last season, eighth at the Youth Olympics in China.
That was 4 years ago.
Oh, 4 years ago, right. I beg your pardon. Now. Okay, so a bit old now, but still top 10 in the Youth Olympics in China. So if you haven't heard of Sian yet, keep your eyes on the triathlon press because you're undoubtedly going to hear more of her in the future. And today, we're not here just to talk about Sian's triathlon career. What's really interesting is Sian has managed to excel over the last few years at this level while suffering from Crohn's disease. So we're going to get a deeper insight into how she manages that condition and what is obviously a huge challenge for her. So welcome to the show, Sian.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. Now, we're sat in a house that's full of triathletes, actually, aren't we?
We've got
Sam Dickinson, Alex Shee and Jack Willis.
Yeah,
all here. So it's a high-performing house, really.
Yeah, we've all lived together for a while now. It's great for training and just racing as well.
Yeah. I mean, some people might think it would be great to live in a house full of triathletes, but do you ever get a bit tired of just talking about triathlon?
I guess you could think we would. We're all quite chilled and stuff, so we don't actually talk about it as much as you'd probably assume we do. We just have each other's lifts to training and stuff, and then once we're back home, it's just on to other things. The guys like playing the Xbox, and I get left watching Vampire Diaries.
And who takes care of all the washing and the cooking?
Everyone sort of does a bit, to be fair. Sam Dickinson's very good with the cooking. And everyone, yeah, there's lots of washing, so we all just take it in turns.
Sam's been nominated for Triathlete of the Year, I think, hasn't he, in Leeds?
Leeds City Award.
Yeah. So maybe that's another thing we should be voting for, is Sam. Yes. Sam as Triathlon Cook of the Year. Great. Okay. Well, let's talk about your triathlon career, Sian. Let's go right back to the beginning. I know you were also English School's 1500 metre running champion. Way back. So would it be fair to say that running is your first love?
Running was definitely my first love as a kid. I joined my running club, Coventry Godiva Harriers, at the age of 7. My granddad and dad used to run, so I was keen to sort of follow them, really. And I was at that club all the way until I came to uni and did cross country, track racing, raced internationally at quite a few different sort of levels, really, sort of the international children's games for 800 metres all the way through to cross country at SIAB. Yeah, and I love it. I love being outdoors. I loved just the whole sort of atmosphere around running events, especially the cross season. So definitely.
You were telling me before how you liked coming home after a cross race.
Yeah.
Being covered in mud.
Yeah, my mum would dread it, but I would always try and get as muddy as possible whilst racing. And it's definitely part of the fun. Sure.
Did you want to be at the front then so you could be the first one through the water splash and through the really muddy bits?
I always used to try and sprint out as fast as possible, and we'd always try and lead as much of the race as I could, really, growing up, especially in like the West Midlands Leagues, Warwickshire Leagues, Coventry Schools, lots of different leagues for cross country. It'd be like doing it every single weekend.
Wow.
So you, before you even got to those representative competitions that we talked about earlier, you know, the triathlon and the 23s, you were already a fairly seasoned international competitor.
Yeah, definitely. I learned a lot through the running. Like I said, I'd done SIAB events.
What's SIAB, sorry?
It's where you race for the English schools. So you race against Wales, Scotland. Okay. I raced for England and I competed over in Ireland. People like Bronwyn Owen were in the team with me, Alex Yee. There were quite a few of us actually. We've all gone into triathlon now as well. I'd done 800 metres on track, 1500 metres on track. I won the International Children's Games out in South Korea. And I was part of the...
How old were you then?
15 probably.
Okay.
And then I became a member of the On Camp with Kelly Holmes Future Stars programme. So she picked me up. So I'd done some like training with her and some of the best athletes in the country on the running site, like running scene.
Do you think that's an advantage to you now then? Because there'll be some people that are in the under 23 squad that may never have competed for Great Britain at a major championships. And clearly that first time there, when you're representing your country, it's the world championships, you might be on the Gold Coast, can be quite nerve wracking, and that can affect your performance. Having gone through that before, do you feel better placed?
Yeah, definitely. I think competing at such big events at a young age definitely helped. I think it's just, I really enjoy it. I love the pressure at racing at such big events as well. So, yeah, I've been really lucky that I've been able to do it from such a young age, I guess.
Okay, what about swimming then?
Yes, I was a real water baby, actually. My grandma started taking me from when I was about 3 months old. I joined my swimming club, City of Coventry, at the age of 7, but had been swimming at my local swimming baths since I was a little toddler. And I was sort of, I went through every single squad there at the swimming club before I came to university here. Lucy Hall was sort of in the squad above me, so I always had someone to like look up to as a role model. And I did that at sort of national level as well and things. So yeah, definitely done a lot on the swimming side. I did a lot of swimming training rather than running training as a kid, for sure.
I think that's a good thing. I mean, there's a couple of things there. One is that, you know, you can develop physically and aerobically without the impact that running gives you.
Yeah.
But also the model that when Jack Maitland and I ran the Talent ID programme in the north of England, well, it must be going back 15 years now. I think we started in 2002. The model was to find people who were really good at swimming and running. Yeah. So we looked for people who weren't quite making the grade in the swim clubs, maybe they weren't in the top squad or weren't quite getting selected for the, you know, Yorkshire juniors as runners, but just missing out there. And we had obviously a template for performances, which I think you still have today.
Yeah, we do.
And on the basis that if they had the swim skills, the aerobic development and the running speed, that you can always teach somebody with a big engine and those skills to ride a bike. But if it goes the other way around, it's not quite as easy.
Yeah, definitely. I only ran 2 or 3 times a week when I was competing internationally, and people would find it crazy. But at the same time, I was also swimming 14 hours a week. So my aerobic fitness was definitely coming from the swimming. And it just helped that I could obviously do some run sessions on the side of that, really.
And I find that coaching age groupers now who are in their 30s, 40s and 50s, who haven't had that sort of, particularly the swimming background, they get frustrated that no matter how hard they try, there's always some guy who seems to swim, you know, sub 20 minutes for 1500 metres, but overlooking the fact that perhaps they were like you and they had a development as a swimmer. And that sort of development, both aerobically and technically, never really goes away, does it?
No, I've always been lucky. I got ill at the start of this year and missed 2 months of swimming. And within 2 weeks of being back, I was already one of the fastest swimmers again. And yeah, it's definitely just the feel of the water. And I think thanking Little Sean for doing so many hours when I was a kid, that I can sort of get away with it a little bit more now.
Well, I think that when you get a bit older, grown-up Sean will thank Little Sean for giving her all of those qualities and giving her a physique that can probably be a little bit more robust in life. And one of the examples that Jack and I had from that squad was that Alistair and Jonathan Brownlee, we found them through looking at swim results and running results and their performances. We also had a young man in the squad by the name of Scott Thwaites. Now, wasn't so good. He was okay at swimming and running, but he was a really good biker, probably better than Alistair and Johnny at that point. And Jonathan and Alistair were perhaps not quite as hot on the biking, but really good swimmers and runners. And unfortunately, that model was what we needed for them to get into the squad. So Scott didn't quite make it, But now Scott rides for Dimension Data on the Pro Tour. So, you know, that Talent ID program we had 15 years ago actually is quite robust, and the predictions that we had then seem to have come true in sort of the way that people have developed and gone
a lot of us athletes who compete internationally, we've all been from swimming and running backgrounds from a very, very young age.
Yeah. So. And there's maybe a couple, isn't there? Mark Buckingham's one who had the swim background and Adam Bowden.
Yeah.
But not many of them have come through from a single sport background.
No. Yeah, they started a lot later and it's amazing how they've picked it up, to be honest. But yeah, a lot of people, even Beth Potter coming back into the sport. However, she used to swim as a kid, so she might have had a few years out. But again, you can pick it up quite fast once you get back into it.
I suppose Jess Learmonth as well, who's also in the squad here in Leeds and one of the senior members now, she was more from a swimming background, but she played football as well, didn't she? So she would have had those good motor skills for running and sprinting. But it's taken her a while to get her running legs up to a point where she's competitive on the world scene.
Well, she's flying now. So.
She is. Yeah, and that's something we can talk about later, is just the patience and consistency of running that Malcolm Brown instilled in everybody, really.
Yeah.
Okay, so you were in the West Midlands scene. You were in the Talent ID programme, getting towards the age of 18. You're probably looking to go off to university. I guess you would have had a few options being a talented athlete, and I think you're at university here, so you must have had a reasonably strong academic background as well.
Yeah, I did my first World Championships in triathlon as a youth still. I raced up in the junior race, so I was 16, and sort of got onto funding then. So I'd always sort of travelled to Loughborough, being from Coventry. So my first idea was to go to Loughborough University with the sport. It was close to home, within an hour. All our sort of England talent squad camps are sort of based in Loughborough, so I sort of knew the area really well. And then I just happened to come to Leeds to visit a few friends and things and just fall in love with the city, the Yorkshire Dales. And that sort of was what made up my mind really to come to Leeds University.
Yeah, it's not quite as hilly around Loughborough, is it?
No, it's not. And for me being in the Midlands, it was a bit of a shock getting into the riding here, but it's just amazing, the views. The hills are worth it.
You mentioned Lucy Hall earlier as being somebody you looked up to and aspired to be like when you were swimming in Coventry. Now, Lucy's at Leeds. Did that influence your decision to be here at all?
Yeah, it did a bit. I've always known Lucy since I was a kid, and her brother was in my swim squad, so I've known the Halls quite well. So having sort of a senior athlete who you know when you move in cities is definitely a bit of a persuader, and it's nice to always go and know people in the squad already.
So for those people who aren't familiar with the performance squads, we've got one in Loughborough, we've got another one in Leeds, we've got another one developing around Vicky Holland and Leeds down in Bath, and then we've got centres in Scotland in Stirling and one in Wales.
Yeah.
What's it like when you come to Leeds? Because clearly you're almost like a full-time athlete with a bit of studying now rather than a school pupil with a bit of triathlon.
Yeah.
So it's things have switched. Is that quite hard, a change to get into, particularly with the changing environment and everything else?
Yeah, it was. It's definitely a big change going from school, because it's such a routine that you're really used to. And you sort of do swimming before in the morning, and then you've got your evening to do either another swim or a run. And then come into the centre, you've suddenly got so much more time, I guess, around university to fit it all in. And not only that, but it's a triathlon centre. So instead of being at a swimming club, a running club, riding a bit on your own, you sort of do everything together. So I think it definitely I think everyone who goes to university and gets stuck in improves a lot over the first couple of years.
And of course, you've got to manage your own time. So there's all of
you
those
don't have
sessions.
Your parents.
yes, that's right. So you've got a new structure and you've got to manage your own time. You've got to wake yourself up in the morning.
Yeah. I think it definitely tests how motivated you are once you get to university.
And I suppose that being in the programme here, the volume of training would be quite a bit higher than you were used to, was it?
Yeah, the swimming kind of backs off a little bit since I've came to university. I was in a swim squad, so I was doing 14 hours, 15 hours a week. And then come into university here, it does decrease a little bit. But the cycling increased a lot for me, and then the gym programme increased a lot, and then run mileage increased a bit. So yeah, by the time I came here, I was doing quite a lot more once everything got added in.
And what about Freshers Week? I mean, my recollection of being a student, which is quite a long time ago, but I do still remember it probably through alcohol haze, was that it was sort of 7 to 10 days just drinking in the bar as late as possible and getting up every morning with a hangover and not going to any of my first lectures. But that can't be the same for triathletes, surely?
No, we enjoy a couple of nights out, but then we're back. Well, we have swim training in the morning, so we've got to be sensible. Not too many nights out, really. It's important to enjoy yourself, but yeah, we all enjoy training, so we don't want to miss it.
And I guess the coaches aren't sympathetic if you turn up with a headache.
Not really, no.
He's a hard taskmaster, Liam. Okay, so now we talked about Crohn's. You didn't find out about Crohn's until you got to Leeds University, did you?
Yeah.
What do you know what brought that on? Whether you'd always had that gene that was there or whether there was some sort of... Because it's an autoimmune disease, so was there some sort of additional stress like coming to college that triggered it off, do you think?
Yeah, well, I'd been at university, obviously started in September, got to January, and we were on a funded camp, sort of weekend away, mountain biking. And I just got these awful stomach cramps whilst we were sort of sat in this meeting, to the point where I sort of had to stand up and say, I'm really sorry, I can't sit here, I'm in too much pain. And I'd had a crash mountain biking, so just assumed that I'd like ruptured something or pulled something or sort of injured myself. So just kind of let it go once the cramp settled and just kind of forgot about it a bit. And by February, I'd gone to Spain on another training camp, sort of with the senior athletes, and started losing blood when I was going to the toilet, blood clots. And that was the point I was like, something's not right. But yeah, it definitely just sort of came out of nowhere, really. I was fine before Christmas, and then after Christmas, it just sort of built up. But it happened really fast. I went from being so healthy to suddenly losing blood, going to the toilet every single time. So yeah, I think going to uni, maybe they say the added stress, a changing environment can trigger something like an autoimmune disease. And the most common age to get Crohn's disease is around 18, 19, and females. So maybe females do stress a bit more than males do.
So for those who aren't familiar with Crohn's disease, can you just take a minute to explain what the symptoms are?
Yeah, well, it's a chronic illness. I've got it for the rest of my life, and it's probably going to get worse, really. It's obviously an autoimmune disease, and it's my body's attacking my own sort of digestive system. So anywhere from my colon all the way up to my mouth can become inflamed or swollen and ulcers and bloody and really sore. And that obviously brings stomach cramps. It's hard to eat. You get diarrhea, a lot of blood loss. That obviously brings fatigue. And then the medications for all of that also brings like different side effects. So you get put onto, I get put onto prednisolone, which is a steroid, to try and control all the inflammation. And that obviously weakens my bones. You can get sort of like a swollen face from liquid retention. So yeah, it's not great.
Wow. Certainly not what you want when you're trying to aspire to be a high performance triathlete.
No. Yeah, it's not ideal.
And I guess... when you were diagnosed with that, did anyone actually say to you, you know, maybe you'd be better off just being, as triathletes, we call people who don't exercise normal people, but did anyone suggest to you that maybe you should back off the triathlon?
Everyone did, to be honest. I was only 18 when I was diagnosed, so I was still very young. And the doctor said straight away, you won't be able to manage an illness like this and be able to do sport, let alone try and do elite sport and the sport that you're doing, which requires so much energy and so much time. So yeah, it was quite scary. And obviously when you've done a sport for most of your life, it was a bit daunting. But luckily it's been 3 years and I'm still going, so it seems to be going okay.
Yeah, how many times do you hear that about people who defy medical advice and go on to prove it wrong? I mean, you know, there's always got to be a flag bearer for proving that it can be done another way, hasn't there?
Yeah.
Okay, so, I'm just listening and processing that list of symptoms that you mentioned there, and I'm thinking that probably the nearest most of us has been to this is, you know, a really bad stomach bug or really bad sort of bout of food poisoning. Would that be sort of similar?
Yeah, it's probably that sort of similar sort of idea. Obviously, the problem with Crohn's disease is that it can go on for months at a time, so I can have a flare-up that lasts 3 months. So yeah, I can be having those symptoms for 3 months and it not settle, and then other people I know can have it for a lot longer. I've been lucky with it being as short as 3 months, really. So you've just got to have your fingers crossed, I guess, and hope that you don't have any major, major flare-ups which require surgery.
Let's go back to training a bit then.
Yeah.
So you've been advised, you've been diagnosed with Crohn's disease, and all of the experts have come in and said, you know, you really shouldn't be doing this, Sham.
Yeah.
But you've decided to ignore their advice and you've gone back to training. Let's just paint the picture of your weekly training load in Leeds, because it will be heavier than for your average age group triathlete.
Yeah.
Even somebody who's committed to training for an Ironman.
Yeah. Well, I swim 5 times a week. Ride 5 times a week, run 4 times a week with 2 sessions, and then the odd run off a bike as well, gym twice and run drills once. So it adds up to 23, 24 hours a week of training, plus university as well.
And how much study are you required to do? Because you're in your final year now.
Yeah. Well, the good thing is with our third year is a lot of athletes split it, but I'm still doing one module and a dissertation at the moment. So it's not too stressful, but it's definitely, you've got to keep on top of it as well.
What are you studying?
Sports and exercise science.
Okay, so that would give you a good insight into the type of training that's prescribed for you.
Yes, it does. And it also, you kind of learn about different health and things with sport. So it's kind of interesting for me, because obviously I'll know about it quite personally as well.
Do you ever, because you seem like an inquisitive sort of person, do you ever question the trainer you're going to go, but hold on, in my lecture today, or I read in this book that you have to do it like this?
Yeah, not too much. I kind of sit down with Liam when we plan what my coach and decide what we think is best for me. I think with my Crohn's, I have to ask more questions and stuff just to make sure that I don't push myself into a hole and things. And I have to make decisions a lot more than other athletes, because if I don't and I don't listen to my body, then my coach doesn't know how I'm feeling, so I have to, and he has to trust that I will tell him. And I've definitely learned that it's better to listen to my body and sort of raise it up if I know something's not quite right now.
Well, that's an interesting point you make there, Sian, because as a coach, this is something that I'm constantly trying to remind the athletes I work with about, is listening to your body. A lot of people seem to be dependent on gadgets now.
Yeah.
You know, for what they do, they have to have the heart rate monitor while they're running. They need to have the power meter while they're riding. They have to have their little watch in the pool. You know, I'm particularly hot on measuring heart rate variability. Do you use any gadgets, or are you really just focused on the old fashioned method of, if I feel a bit rubbish, I'm not training?
We do use gadgets, but it's definitely like our rate sessions as to how hard I found it between a scale of 1 to 5, because you can set a session and say it's meant to be a threshold swim, but if you're feeling tired, you might actually find it's more max than threshold. So then the doctors and my coach and I can look back at the week and go, well, that was too hard, you found everything too hard, you must be tired, or we can push you a little bit more, everything's quite easy, and sort of judge it off a bit more of that, rather than just you've got to go at this pace, this power, this speed. It's definitely a bit more off how are you sort of feeling in those sessions as well.
Do you are you quite dedicated about keeping your training diary then?
I wasn't necessarily growing up as a kid, but since I've sort of been ill, I've realised I have to be on it a lot more. I know how important it is now to sort of monitor it all and things, and it is a massive help, especially when you can look back and see, did I slightly train too hard and did I run myself down? Or just nice to see a consistent block as well and know everything that works, so let's keep doing that sort of thing.
Do you have to be particularly on it with regards to your sleep as well then?
Yeah, as athletes, we tend to make sure we get enough sleep.
But what about you as Sian, the individual with Crohn's disease as well? Does sleep become more important?
It does. It's massive for Crohn's disease. If you don't get enough sleep and your body starts getting tired, then it's more likely that I could flare up and get myself really ill. So for me, if I know I haven't had enough sleep, then I'm better off recovering and stuff rather than having a session sometimes.
Athletes are always treading a fine line between, you know, pushing to the edge, but then going over the edge. Like treading a fine line without a safety net, really, aren't you?
Yeah, it's definitely new. And when I got diagnosed, they've never known an elite triathlete with Crohn's disease before. So I'm kind of the first person that anyone's aware of. We've heard of a couple in different sports, but they've got colitis, which is a slightly better form of Crohn's disease in a way. It only affects your colon. So it's not, it can't affect as big of an area. Still not good.
I had a friend with colitis and I know it wasn't particularly pleasant. I'm laughing at your description of a slightly better form of Crohn's.
Yeah. Well, that's what people with Crohn's feel.
You've only got colitis.
It's still really bad. But yeah, we definitely keep on top of it.
Now, you mentioned feeding back to your coaches, which is what most athletes would have to do, and to your doctors. So you've got two people overseeing. Yeah. So what do you give the doctors the same information that you send to Liam, or do they have a different set of information?
They tend to just look at my training. They meet up sort of every 2 weeks and check everything. But they also check my blood, so I have blood tests. As well as the sports doctors, I have regular appointments with the hospital as well, so every 6 weeks. So I can go and talk to people there on the more medical side rather than just training. I have to meet a lot more people than everyone else sort of does.
Now, coaches have a slightly different perspective on where you're going with everything than the doctors do.
Yeah.
Do you find that that ever causes friction? Because I guess the doctors are mostly concerned with your health. They are triathlon doctors, but they're more focused on your health. And whilst your coach will be focused on your health, he's more focused on performance. Does that ever cause a bit of a... I guess it doesn't cause a fallout.
But it must
cause a bit of friction occasionally because you're there as well in the middle.
Yeah, well, I had that situation around the World Championships this year, actually. I had pre-qualified because I had medalled at European Under 23s last year and top 10 at the World Champs. So I was already pre-qualified to Gold Coast off the 2017 season and then got really ill this year, was in hospital with glandular fever, neutropenia, Crohn's disease flare-up. So didn't train for over 2 months. And then decided I still wanted to go to the World Champs. I was going to get back into training, get myself as fit as possible to still go. And as an athlete, that was my motivation to get into training. It was obviously nobody wants to turn down putting a GB suit on at a championships. So my coach, Liam, was all for that, whereas the doctors were like 100% not, you shouldn't go. You're going to put yourself at risk. We did have that and we all had to sit down, and once I made that decision, everyone obviously backed me and did what they could to then help. But yeah, it was a little bit, there was a bit, not a disagreement, but we had different opinions.
Well, so where does this come from then, this sort of willingness to push yourself? Are you one of these people that thinks, right, I'm just going to see what happens and I'd rather have tried it and failed than not have bothered at all?
Yeah, well, I thought that with the World Championships, I was thinking, I'm going to watch everyone go out there and race, and I've decided to turn it down. I've pre-qualified and I'm going to have to sit with that decision. And I was like, I can't turn down a World Championships knowing that I could go there and still be in the race. And especially being a swimmer, I knew that I could make front pack at the champs. And I was like, if there's a breakaway, then you're sort of going to be in the top 15 and you don't have to even run that fast, which is what happened in the end, luckily. It was a tough decision, but I'm very happy with the one I made.
So let's just talk about that illness that you had then. So you mentioned earlier that you'd been really, really fit in March. You went to Lanzarote.
Yeah.
You must have been really looking forward to the season, feeling so good then. And then all of a sudden, bang, you were ill and in hospital. How long did you spend in hospital?
I was kept in for around a week. And then obviously I was discharged, but... I was lying in bed for nearly sort of 2 months, really. I started doing a few light walks and stuff, but when I got put into hospital, I was struggling to even get myself to the bathroom, really. I was sort of that worn out and tired. It was March, April time. And then obviously World Champs were in September. So it was definitely a bit of a push trying to do that, but I made it.
Did you say you were in quarantine at one point?
Yeah. So what happened is I was the fittest. I had my best ever season in 2017, came off it really motivated, trained really hard all winter, my most consistent winter, no illnesses, no injuries. Got to February and went on a count to Lanzarote with Tom Bishop, Jess Lehmann, Mark Austin, and a few of us other athletes were sort of just out there as training partners, really, because they were leading into the Commonwealth Games. And I thought, this is a great opportunity to test myself a bit more with senior athletes and sort of push to the next level. And came back, and within a week I was lying in a hospital bed, and basically my former Crohn's disease, I'm put onto immunosuppressants, which is a low dose of chemotherapy, very, very low dose. But what had happened was my blood count, white blood cells had just sort of been destroyed, especially the neutrophils. So I was in the danger zone. So when I got taken into hospital ill, they tested my bloods and I was quarantined pretty fast because they were like, you're just walking around ready to pick up anything.
With all those other ill people.
Yeah, it wasn't an ideal place. I was put into a wheelchair and wheeled up.
Oh, bye. My friend that I was mentioning, he had to spend, because he had to have chemotherapy and he had to spend a bit of time in quarantine.
Yeah.
It's a bit lonely in there.
Yeah. Well, so I had the neutropenia, which had led to glandular fever. And then I was taking off my medications to try and recover from it all, which caused a 3-month Crohn's flare up. So, yeah, it wasn't. It was a tough few months, but got healthy again.
I mean, that situation, not quite as drastic as that, but somebody getting ill or injured and missing a large chunk of the training,
yeah,
is not uncommon for a lot of athletes.
Yeah,
and yet you seem to have pulled through okay there. I mean, I guess the first thing was, while you were stuck in that quarantine ward or you were in your bed for 2 months without the energy even just to get up and probably go and make yourself a cup of tea, I guess that being an elite triathlete was the last thing on your mind there. Did you just look out the window and think, I'd like to go and enjoy the sunshine and the breeze in my hair?
I still missed it. And I remember within the first 6 weeks, I even tried to get out for a little jog. I was like, I can do it. And I ran about 30 seconds and was like...
From here, from your house?
From my house, yeah. And got back home and was like, I can't. I'm still way too ill for this. And I was like, it was definitely the inner athlete just wanting to think that I was ready and then quickly realised that I definitely...
So I'm not sure if you know Katrina Morrison. She was an elite Ironman triathlete. She's retired now, but she had an Achilles problem that kept her out for about 18 months. And I remember her saying when she was first given the all clear to go for a run, she went out with her dog and they went to the beach. And she said, I just ran along the sand, on the hard sand for 2 minutes. And it was so nice just to be able to get out and run without pain. I wasn't worried about how fast I was running or how far. And it gave her a different perspective on the sort of latter stages of her career, knowing that actually that what she enjoyed was just being outside and training. Is that been the same for you?
Yeah, I definitely learned this year that it's so easy to appreciate being healthy and being able to train and race and just take it for granted. So like 2017 had gone amazing. I'd been to European and World Champs and lots of other races around it. And then 2018, I was lucky to do one race this year. And I definitely just standing on the start line was like, wow, I've missed this. And I'm so thankful that I'm back on the start line because I could have not raced this year at all. And I used a lot of motivation just watching my friends and that race well as well. And just being happy for them and seeing them do well. I was like, I can't wait to get back and be with them.
Having missed a couple of months of meaningful training, how long did it take you to get your fitness back, do you think?
It took a while. We took it very, very slow. So my first few weeks, it was literally just do what you feel like you can do. Very easy jogs, a couple of K in the pool. I'd be lapped in the pool, which wasn't usual for me. I was always a swimmer.
It's all relative, Sian. You've not swimming, are you?
So it was just very, very basic. And then I sort of got to July time. And I was like, July, August were my 2 months where I could get a bit more training in, a few more sessions leading into the World Championships.
But still having, you know, because clearly now the inner athlete is sort of broken out a bit, like coming back out of his shell. You're wanting to push on. You've got this deadline looming of late September to go to Australia. But of course, in the back of your mind, you don't want to have a relapse and go backwards. So how difficult was it mentally trying to balance those two?
It was really tough, actually, because you start to feel fine again and you think, right, I can do more. And then my coach or my parents and that would be like, Sian, you can't do any more. You're lucky you're doing what you're doing. Like, don't overcook it. If you want to get back on the start line, then you've just got to be steady away and not do anything silly or stupid, really. And I definitely feel I was just happy to be doing anything. So I was like, I don't want to overdo it and end up in the situation I was again.
I guess that at some point you just have to accept I'm going to be this level of fitness.
Yeah.
It's no point in trying to be my peak fitness because I just haven't got enough time.
I think that is definitely what I did. I said, I just thought I know I'm not going to be as fit as I was in February or as fit as I wanted to be standing on the start line. But if I can just get fit and into the race, then that's good enough for me. And hopefully in 2019, can come back even stronger off it. But once I'd got that, it's so easy to get into your head. I just want to push it. I need to get fit as quickly as possible. But it was just to tick the sessions off that you've been planned to do. Other athletes might be training more and I might want to do it, but I've just got to look at my training and be happy with that for now.
I know I've definitely been in that position myself, and I've observed it in other athletes wanting to get that fitness back and pushing too hard and ending up getting injured again and not even making it to the start line. So it's a very balanced perspective for somebody of your age, really, because I guess the impetuosity of youth sometimes overrides sensibility, which is what you get when you get a bit older.
Yeah. Yeah, it was testing, especially living with triathletes, dating a triathlete, your friends are triathletes.
Well, they all went, didn't they? Sam went to Australia.
World champs, and Alex Yee went
and
as well.
Tom as well.
Tom, yeah,
and
my boyfriend
Jack
was out
go.
There. Jack wasn't, but okay. He was at Europeans with us a month later.
Okay, so yeah, so everybody getting excited and
they were all trained. Those guys were training so much, so many hours, a lot more than I could possibly do. Mm. And sometimes you start to feel lazy and then you realise, actually, I'm still training a lot as well anyway. It's just they're training crazy amounts.
Yes. So let's talk about nutrition then, because, you know, you can't fail to pick up a triathlon magazine these days and read about low carb, high fat, paleo, vegan, keto, vegetarian, whatever other philosophy of eating. I guess for you, it's just you eat what your stomach will cope with. So there's no philosophy other than I need to get nutrients into my body.
Yeah, I've never dieted or even looked or thought about anything like that, especially I guess I was diagnosed at 18. So since I was diagnosed, it was just find foods that suit me, meals that sit well on my tummy and stick with that. And if I can feel any sort of soreness, then I sort of go on to Complans, which is a nutritional
exciting
drink.
Food.
Yeah. So
for those listeners who don't remember Complan, explain to them what the original Complan was like and how they might have smartened it up a bit.
It's basically a drink, a powder that you can add to water or milk, and it's just got loads and loads of calories in, basically. And they've got three different flavours, so strawberry, vanilla and chocolate now.
Yeah, it's what they give you in hospital, really, isn't it, if you can't digest your food, because you can swallow it easily.
Yeah,
and I guess that some people are fed through a tube even.
People with Crohn's disease and stuff were recommended, if you're feeling sore, soups, Complans, liquid diets. I've been on liquid diets in the past, but not out of choice, just obviously health reasons. But when I'm not on a flare-up and I'm in remission, then I just eat healthy and normal foods, really.
Is there anything that you have to avoid all the time?
Not particularly, just the obvious stuff like spices, alcohol, high fiber. So I can't eat brown bread anymore. I have to eat sort of white bread. I used to eat a lot of porridge, but it's too high fiber, so I've just gone on to other cereals. Like skins to vegetables aren't great, so you tend to have to peel peppers, even apples if I'm on a flare-up, just to remove fibre, really. But other than that, you can still eat the food, you just have to be conscious of it.
So with your intestines and your colon being a little bit more sensitive, if you were to eat something like granola that's quite rough, does that have more of an effect on your stomach than if you were to eat something that's a little softer?
Definitely. It can irritate it, so if I'm not on a flare-up, I tend to be fine, but you can't push it either. You don't want to be eating too much food. That's just going to upset it, because you will flare up. So I tend to just avoid stuff like that, or the odd treat, I might have it. But I've kind of got used to it now. Before, I'd always have brown bread, porridge for breakfast, and it was so hard not having that. But now I've kind of got used to having white toast and stuff instead. And
I suppose it's a bit like with your training. You can get into a false sense of security that it's behind you. Take your eye off the ball and then it'll be there. So you can never really completely relax.
No. Oh, yeah. You've always got to be on top of it. And before I go abroad, I always try and make sure that I know there's going to be food. Or if I don't, then I pack a load of food myself, just rice, microwave rice and things. So I know if worst comes to worst, I've still got food with me.
Yeah, I guess some of the countries that you go to race in, it will be quite easy to find those foods. Yeah. But there must be challenges with some countries. You know, if you go into China, for instance, or where they have a completely different culture and sort of type of food that's available easily.
Yeah, well, I did go to China for last year for Dasan trip. And I really struggled out there with the food because you're not allowed meats anyway, really, because of the sort of...
Oh, yeah, Chinese meats has a red flag about it for steroids,
so
doesn't it?
It's just a no-go with the meats. And then a lot of stuff's either spicy and it's just foods I haven't had before, so it could really upset my tummy. Whereas if you've sort of always had them and it's sort of used to it. So I was sort of living off rice for quite a long time out there.
They do a lot of rice.
Yeah, so it's okay.
And what about long travelling then? Because, you know, you went to Australia, so that's a day and a half's worth of travelling. So tiring anyway, even if you didn't have your condition. The challenge of airport food, going through 12 hours of time zone changes, going from late British summer to Australian spring, you know, difference in climate. So all of those things there, which you've talked about as being challenging for your condition, all of a sudden they're going to be thrown together in one package. So what did you do specifically in advance to just take as much care as possible?
All that sort of thing's tough for any athlete. Like you said, you've got the different time zones for long-haul travel. But for someone with an autoimmune disease, then it's a real risk of causing a flare-up or something. So initially I get a GP letter or a letter from the hospital explaining my condition, explaining what to do if I flare up. So if I get taken to hospital whilst abroad, they sort of know how to look after me and what medications I'm on. So I have all that sorted.
Explaining all those white powders you have to carry through customs.
And then I tend to, so for Australia, I took out spare medications. So if I flared up, I could sort of go straight onto those as like a caution, really. So normally I'm on Pentasa sachets and Mecaptopurine, but I'll also pack like Pentasa suppositories and enemas as well, so that they're sort of backup. So if I feel any sign that anything could be sort of changing, I get straight onto those as well.
Did you have to take extra luggage then to sort of like full of your drugs?
Well, it was a lot of medications and the enemas were quite heavy. So I gave the lads, Ian, Dicko, took some out for me as well and handed them over.
Excellent. I can understand, you know, because they're quite hot when you go into Australia, aren't they?
Yeah.
With sort of, you know, there's a TV programme on where you can watch them doing the border control.
Yeah.
And they're very, very strict with taking foodstuffs in and,
yeah,
and little
are.
Things and questions.
That's why I had my doctor's notes ready just in case they asked what anything was.
I can just imagine Sam saying, no, I haven't packed these. They're not mine. They belong to that girl that's just gone through there. Okay, so and what about things like dealing with the heat then and the stress that because I know you said you're used to international competition, but still, the World Championships is the World Championships. It's going to bring a little bit of anticipation, slightly elevated heart rate, maybe sort of not sleeping quite as well.
Yeah, well, heat is a risk for any sort of stress that can add to it can cause a flare-up. So luckily here at Leeds Beckett, we could do heat prep and things. So that sort of introduced me into it ready. So it wasn't too many things thrown together all at one time. I was sort of already adapted to the heat a little bit, which helped. And then obviously it's just staying cool out there, like no sunbathing really, just sort of sitting in the shade or cool apartment.
I mean, you're professional athletes pretty much. So do people sit out and sunbathe before it big competitions?
None of the athletes really. We might have the odd sort of, obviously you're swimming in an outdoor pool and things, so you're
running
sort of out
track.
In the sun a lot anyway,
yeah.
So you have to be careful. And if you're out for long rides, then you can be out for three to 4 hours. So yeah, you have to be careful and try and pick the shade or the cooler parts of the day when you can. So yeah, and then the stress of the competition, it's just, I just sort of know I have to stay calm, otherwise I could also not just have a bad race, but I could also get ill. So it's like a bit of extra pressure, but I just enjoy it. I don't put too much pressure on myself. Like I said, I was just so happy to be on the start line and be back racing that whatever result sort of happened, I would have took. And I really wanted to deliver still, obviously, and everyone wants to go there and perform. But at the same time, it's just an amazing sort of feeling standing on the start line to a world champs.
You were 15th, I think.
Yeah, 15th.
So, from where you'd been, I mean, clearly, in a normal fit state, you might have been a little disappointed with that.
Yeah.
But from where you'd been earlier on in the year and having missed 2 months of training, you must have been absolutely ecstatic, not just to get on the start line, as you've already described, but to actually 15th in the world? And you're only just into the under 23.
Yeah, I've got two more years left as well. So obviously I came ninth in my first year last year. So going off that, you'd be a bit disappointed. And I felt like in February I would have done a lot better than ninth. But going off the circumstances and the position I was in, I was 15th in the world, and that's still amazing. It's one of my still best ever results at a world championships. I was still in the front pack in the mix of the race for 2/3 of it. So, yeah, I was really thrilled with that.
I suppose that's a really good example of how, you know, we all have goals, but then when something gets in our way, we have to readjust and think, well, you know, what can I do now? And put that into perspective and then accept what that's going to bring you.
I think that was it. I just had to accept it. It would have been silly for me to think, right, I came ninth last year, I want to top five this year, because I knew the position I was in. I would have had the race of my life to have done that. And with the fitness and the amount of training I had, realistically, it was probably impossible at a world championships. Like, the start lines were obviously very, very hard. And yeah, so I changed. I just said, if I can try and make front pack, ride well. And I looked at more of a sort of process rather than the outcome goal instead, and said, if I'm in there for 2/3, I know I might struggle a bit more on the run now, but it's, yeah, just looking at the process rather than the outcome goal for this year, really. And then hopefully reset for next year and go there and perform a lot better and to how I should.
Let's talk about next year then. So you've just started your winter training again. What goals do you have for 2019?
Well, the main one, obviously, now for me would actually be just to have a really consistent sort of year. I'm still learning about my Crohn's disease and the training and racing with that. So I'm hoping the medications I'm on now and what I've learned this year, I can sort of look after that and hopefully not flare up and things. And if I can go into next season fit, then hopefully do my first World Cup race and then obviously go to the World and the European Under 23 Championships again. And I'd love to be pushing for a podium at Europeans again and then top five at Worlds for sure.
So World Cup, that's not WTS, is it? That's
no.
A sort of level below. So that's like, if we're talking football, WTS is like Champions League.
Yeah.
World Cup's Premier League, and then ETU stuff is like Championship, first division, yeah?
Yeah, like obviously long term, in about 2-3 years, I'd love to be on the World Series circuit. And that is definitely my goal, and Olympics one day would be a dream. But yeah, obviously the senior girls start list at the moment for GB, there's so many of them that are impressive, and I just need to take my time. I need to go and perform at World Cups, and hopefully if I can do that next year and start to race well at those, then obviously World Series in a couple of years.
Well, you've got some great inspirers and mentors here in Leeds, haven't you? We've mentioned a couple already. There's Lucy training here in Leeds, there's Jess, we've got Georgia now, who's broken through and had some great results. We've had Non and Vicky, who were also here.
They've all been in Leeds.
And the other girls that you're training with. So you've got, there's a great pack of female triathletes in Leeds for you to work with. And I guess you're learning from all of them.
Yeah, definitely. And someone like Non is so great at passing on like advice and things. She's so nice. And obviously just watching those girls race at the top end, it does make you want to think, oh, I can't wait to get there myself and be there. And seeing them train, you know that one day you probably can as well. So it's very exciting.
Well, and each of them, I mean, Lucy's had time out. Non and Vicky both had times out before they won, came in the top four at the Olympics. And then Georgia also, she's had quite a long time out, didn't she, with that sort of foot and ankle injury. So they've all come back. And that those sort of return to good performances are inspiring for anybody. But if you're right in the middle of it and seeing the obstacles they've overcome.
Yeah, well, definitely. I spoke to Non and Lucy both this year about it, because I said to Non, I was there like, she's had quite a few setbacks and she seems to come back so strong. She says so positive, and just having that sort of person around you to look up to and sort of see what she's been through and then the achievement she's also had on top of that, it does make you think, well, everyone has their tough moments and everyone has mumps out and problems and not necessarily things you even know about happen. And the top athletes all get through that, and that's the main part.
I think that's a really good lesson probably to close on there, Sian, is that I think people see professional athletes in any sport as being privileged, as having all the benefits, you know, but you've all had to work to get where you are, and life still affects you, you know, in your case, with this illness, in the athletes we've just mentioned, injuries and setbacks, it still affects them. They're still normal people, get affected by it, but they overcome those challenges and get back. Because if they didn't, then that's for them, it's their career over, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then they do have to become like the rest of us, working some other way for a living and maybe doing a bit of running and cycling as their hobby.
Yeah, well, yeah, definitely. I think it's, for most of us, it's our lifestyle and things. So your drive to get back is there. And Tom Bishop, my boyfriend, he always sort of says, he's like, what a life do we have that our hobby is our job? And he's like, you want to make that last as long as possible. So when you have injuries and illnesses, that's your motivation to get back, really.
Yeah, just looking out the window there now though, Sian, your job doesn't look too attractive today, does
it? In the rain, cold and rain.
We're here in Leeds and we're looking out of the window. It's grey, there's a bit of wind and it's drizzling. But anyway, some people would rather be doing that than being in an office.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm one of them.
Yeah, me too. Okay, so any final messages for our listeners, Sian, on top of what you've already delivered?
I think the main thing for me that I've learnt this year is just be thankful and enjoy training and racing when you can. And don't rush things. If you do have a setback, then just take your time getting back into it.
Great. Well, listeners, thank you very much for being here again. This was Sian Rainsley.
Thank you for
being here, Sian. I'm Simon Ward. This was the Triathlon Coach Swatcast. We will be back in 7 days' time with another fantastic guest. But for now, enjoy your week.
That's a wrap for this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening to the conversation, and I hope you learned at least one thing. If this is the first time you've listened in, please go back and take a listen to some of our previous guests, and I can guarantee they will be just as good as the one you've just heard. If you've been a regular listener, then thank you for being a part of this journey with me so far. Finally, I'd like to take just a few seconds to tell you about my SWAT Inner Circle program. In the last few years, I've spent an awful lot of time creating training programs and resources to help you train and race at whatever triathlon distance you choose, and for some of the events outside of triathlon like aquabike, duathlon and swim run events. As a SWAT member, you get access to all of these plans for 12 months of the year, and on top of that we provide guidance on strength and conditioning, nutrition, plus a whole host of other supportive activities which help you to train, recover and race better. We also have a really friendly Facebook community. It's an exclusive Facebook page for SWAT members only, and there are over 150 of them already. If you join, you'll be able to get access to that page, and you'll be able to ask for help, and our members are all too happy to provide guidance and advice based on their experiences. I'll also be there to help you find solutions to your training problems, and all you have to do is tag me in the Facebook page in one of your posts, or you can book a 15-minute phone call should you need one. If you'd like more information, or if you're ready to press the button and join the SWAT Inner Circle, just email beth@thetriathloncoach.com and she will send you all of the details. So that's all for this week. Hopefully I'll see you again next week, same time, same place, with a different guest.